start with Toni Boynton. We know Toni. She's from Te Waimana, Ruatoki, the Eastern Bay of Plenty, the centre of the universe. She was the crusader for Māori Ward. She's currently a Māori Ward councillor there in Whakatane, and we're going to talk to her about what it's like being a council member, and, of course, the rollback in terms of Māori wards from ACT and this coalition government. Tēnā koe, Toni.
Oh, tēnā koe, Shane. Mihi atu kia o koutou. All our whānau out there. Yes, always awesome to be on the show with you and to talk with you. As a councillor, my first term, a Māori ward councillor, it's been a big learning curve, but I have really enjoyed it. We've got three Māori ward councillors, and the feedback we receive from our staff and that, and others around the table, is that the decision making has really shifted into another place, into a more positive place, where some of them have said they've been around for a while and they had never heard of those different perspectives before. And it has also changed their thinking.
Yeah, Toni, I want to talk more about the role that you currently have. But given the current political context and where ACT, New Zealand First, and the National Party is, the coalition government, in terms of wanting referendums for those councils that didn't have referendums, just simply had a vote at council level. I want to talk about your role, but let's just start from the beginning. Tell us, just remind our whānau about your involvement in crusading for Māori wards and sort of how it started.
It actually started at Awanuerangi, Te Karewana Awanuerangi. I was doing policy studies, and that sort of led me into seeing how the whole political system works, and then being interested in what was happening locally. And I had seen that the representation review was happening and around Māori wards, and I had seen that we had lost the last time and the previous time before, every time it had been tried to be established. So it was sort of like, hey, we need to do something here in Whakatane. And then we also worked, and because there's many whānau across the motu also who were part of that movement and supporting the establishment of Māori wards. We drove a hard campaign here. We had a whole community that was involved. We had the councillors and the mayor on our side. We held a hikui here in Whakatane. We had Andrew Judd over here to talk to our whānau, not just our Māori whānau, but also our wider Te Tiriti whānau, to try and win the referendum. Unfortunately, there was a big... you had Hobson's pledge come into town.
Can I just stop you at that, Toni? Because that is my understanding. You had a lot of outside of Whakatane influence, and that was well funded from outside the Whakatane region. Tell us about that.
Yes, so we were up against a $250,000 campaign.
$250,000 campaign in a small council like Whakatane.
there was other councils too at the time. There was five of us, so they were sending their material to all of those places. And I think we had a lot of aroha, and we did have a lot of support from our Māori trusts and our iwi organisations. So in kind, you know, we didn't have the pūtea, but we had people power, I guess.
It was a tough run.
It really was.
And really interesting, eh, Toni? Because we're talking, 3 years ago? And what we've since discovered, if we look at what happened in Australia with our Indigenous sisters and brothers and the loss of the yes vote and a voice to Parliament, which was very moderate. All it was basically elected people from the from the mob, as they call them, that would simply advise the government. That's all it was. It had no statutory right. Couldn't set legislation. No treaty component. They lost it, and there was a lot of millions of dollars pumped in internationally through Atlas Group, who has a connection with with Hobson's Pledge. So the whānau there in Whakatāne were amongst the first to feel the effect of overseas moneyed interest into local decision-making processes.
Yeah, big time. And they've they've really rooted themselves in here now.
Yeah.
And so you've seen all these different groups. You saw it through COVID. You saw it towards, you know, the previous government. And they've really embedded themselves. They use the Christian conservative groups.
Yes.
They use the farming groups. So you had Groundswell, the evangelists. You had the Rights Coalition.
Three Waters.
You have all of these. Yes.
Three
and
Waters.
They reactivate. They reactivate the same networks to be able to disseminate all of that information.
And you know, in terms of Three Waters, Tony, our listeners know that, and my whakapapa is like yours, same as yours, Te Waimana, Ruatuki, Whakatohia, born and bred in Kawerau, but no whakapapa connection there. And we know how paru our rivers and our lakes are.
Oh, definitely. And they use Māori, the governance issue, as the battering tool. You know, and it's, well, I shouldn't say it's funny, because now those costs have come back into council. And our rates have gone up all across the motu, because we now have to factor that in.
What's been the rate rise?
So for Whakatāne at the moment, we're 9.5, but we will be going up to, so we've got our draft LTP out at 17.5.
Wow, that will have a huge impact in a cost of living crisis. But just explain, however, Tony, how big the infrastructure problem is in Whakatāne. But let's just for our listeners, because you know Whakatāne is quite small. What's the ratepayer base?
So about 16,000.
16,000 people, and the infrastructure debt as it stands now is?
Well, originally with the Three Waters, for us to be able to do the things we needed to do.
And this is just the basics, just the fundamentals.
Yeah. The main thing with Three Waters is that the resource consents expire in 2020.
Yes, that's right.
So for years we've kept rates down because that's what people wanted, and the investment never went into it.
Yeah.
So in total, when we were going to hand it over to the government or the entities, it was $460 million.
$460 million
for Whakatāne. Now, because it's come back to us, we've had to cut that right back down to $117 million, and we still have high interest rates. I mean, there's lots of other factors. Still have high rates. There's lots of other factors as part of that amount, but the Three Waters has an impact, big time. We're just scraping along with what we have and trying to do what we can.
So that is a debt for every single ratepayer of $10,000.
Yes.
And so we're talking about the inability for the Whakatāne Council in the mid to long term to supply clean water, to supply the infrastructure to keep our rivers and our waterways protected. We're just actually talking about quite fundamental basics, aren't we, Tony?
Well, that's right. Mm. I mean, nothing can operate if we don't have clean water through our taps, or if we can't flush our tickle down the drain. You know, businesses can't, open and things can't. Off schools, it affects everybody.
Yeah, that's right,
so,
Tony.
Yeah.
But people come and go, but manu whenua remain.
Always.
Always.
And we're never going to grow smaller, are we?
No. And And so Tony, there seems to be, you know, there was a lot of uproar around the referendum, lost narrowly, a lot of outside money put in there. But by and large, people have got on with the job. The rauru-rauru simply doesn't exist. People just get on and do the mahi. Is that your sort of analysis by and large?
Yes, well, you know, once it was passed and we established Māori wards, and the whole thing about the sky falling, you know, and our towns turning into apartheid states and that, you know, went poof because it didn't happen. Yeah. And the fact that when we came into council and our contribution around the table, where, you know, there were some people who sort of thought, who were surprised.
Yeah.
Because they thought, oh, well, the Māoris will only know things about Māori or only talk about Māori, you know. But no, we don't. We talk about and make decisions about everything and everyone, which is your role on council. But I think some people were surprised that we have, we're multi-talented. We have lots of skills. We don't just think
absolutely
about Māori things.
And also, Tony, you know, I had this big argument on another show last week. We live in both worlds, you know. Many Pākehā don't, but actually, I have a lot of hope, Tony, because more and more Pākehā, particularly young Pākehā, and our Pacifica whānau, and our Chinese whānau, and our Indian whānau, they're learning more about us. You know, our young people, it seems to me, Tony, don't have their hang-ups that folks in my generation and above have. People just simply get on and they understand and they have a sense of belonging through the Māoriness and the browning of Aotearoa New Zealand.
Yes, well, that's right. It's always about Māori have always led the way in breaking through that ceiling. I mean, like when you think about when the anthem was first sung in Te Reo,
that's right,
and how the uproar was that.
Yes,
no, and now every school, everybody thinks there's no second thought about it.
It was only two generations, Tony. Only two generations ago, where the world was going to come to an end because a woman who worked for the post office at the time, called Nada Glavish, said "Kia ora."
That's right. Well, that's the thing. It's times have changed, and our next generation that we have is just more disconcerted. You know, they're more able to access information, but they've also able to sort information much more sharply. You know. Than before,
that's right, Tony. It is about information, but the dynamics in a lot of rural and provincial Aotearoa has changed, and I'll explain why. It's the economic dynamics. The largest employer is probably Awanui-Arangi. You know, it certainly would be up there, eh? You know, I'm talking about single employer. Because the board mills only employs a small portion, and then you have all that money that is pumped into a town like Whakatane through the Māori trust, such as the Putuaki Māori trust, such as Ngāti Awa, even Whakatohia. So the economic might of the brown dollar is being recognised by non Māori.
Yes, well, I think too, you're right, it's a matter of economics and it's also about social capital. So having Māori wards and councillors around decision making is also about ensuring that those relationships are far better. And with those relationships come opportunities to be able to work together. You know, there were in the other government with the PGF funding or Kanoa funding or whatever it's called, many of that was you know, it had built into that those had to have relationships with mana whenua and or outcomes for Māori. So having that happen as well then has allowed small towns like this to see the opportunities rather than the tropes of what Māori are being a block. And those opportunities have been beneficial, like you said. Ngā Te Awa as a iwi with all their different businesses and trusts, and also they are some of the largest contributors to our local economy. Mm. So it makes business sense to have good relationships with them.
So tell me something, Tony. The legislation hasn't been drawn up yet, but if it was to be drawn up and we take on board what Seymour has said, how would it work?
Well, I've seen so far some stuff has come out of DIA around what it may look like, and that they want to introduce it in May. They want to have it passed in July, and then by August, early September, they will be asking councils I think there's 45 councils that are impacted, to make a decision on whether to disestablish Māori wards.
I understand, and I stand to be corrected, that if they don't, you have to put it to referendum at the next body local body elections. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, and so it doesn't even have the whole thing about the petition to have the referendum. Yeah. It's like you either make a decision to disestablish, get rid of them, or if you don't do that, then you must have a poll, and so that's really overreaching into things. The concern about that too is that we had a few in the last round who didn't have enough numbers for a petition, which clearly showed that the community was happy to have it. Now they've taken away that and forcing us to have a poll. It's basically you disestablish it yourself, or we're going to force the poll and make your communities disestablish it. And that's tough, because we know the reason why it never succeeded for nearly 20 years was because the majority of voters are not Māori.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, I think the message is for our people, we've got to get enrolled. We've got to vote. We have to play the game. That really is the reality, Tony. So are you already organising? You're a great organiser, Tony. Are you already getting there on the ground?
Well, there are groups, and there are, you know, you've got great organisations like Action Station, who were part of the petition that we delivered to Parliament for Māori wards, and so those, you know, there are, the workings are happening at the moment. We also have Te Maruata, which is Local Government New Zealand, the Māori subcommittee of Local Government New Zealand, who are also they're full of the network of Māori ward councillors and Māori representatives in local government. So they're active. They're being able to keep our whānau up to date, but also too wanting to ensure that we look after their hauora, because we know what's going to happen, and it's already started happening. You've got a government in place where people now, it's like having our own sort of three-headed Trump.
That's right.
You know, you've got people who now feel emboldened to be outward with their comments remarks and attacks.
That's right.
So we want to look after our people who are in these positions and the attacks that are going to come. Yeah.
You know, Tony, it's always a pleasure getting your whakaaro. I've got a lot of respect for you, as our listeners do. Not only do you represent people at a political level, but you're out there in the trenches day in, day out, sticking up not only for Māori, but for your community there in the Eastern Bay of Plenty. So that's Tony Boynton.